Welcome to the 10th edition of the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and joined, as always, by my esteemed and illustrious co-host.
I am esteemed and illustrious. I am Ben Tully. I go by Scarlet Knight on the boards.
All right, so we had our first regional, and other regions had their first regionals. So, Ben, what do you think of regional season so far, and what did you think of your first regional?
I've been finding it really hard to actually keep up with all the regional results, especially this past week. So the first weekend, so that was April 5th. You know, there were a couple of other concurrent regionals happening, so I was keeping track of them. One of them was being run by a friend of ours, Rings, from the Game of Thrones community. So we were getting text updates from that. But this last weekend, where there was five regionals across the country, I still am trying to catch up and to see which decks won and what the, you know, what the metas look like and how many people showed up and things like that. So I've been completely overwhelmed by regionals and the results so far.
It seemed like there were 500. Are you sure there were only five this past week?
I might be even wrong at five. There might have been 20 for all I know.
So, Ben, what did you think of your regional then? Did you have a good time?
I had an interesting time. All aspects of my regional, I feel, were interesting. I ended up being the head TO in terms of organizing the round-to-round placements and who was playing who and the strength of schedule for the final cut and all of that stuff, which meant that I was also in charge of prize support, which was screwy from the day we showed up at the con. We didn't actually have the prizes the day of. We didn't get them until the day after. It was kind of a mess up on FFG's side, but they really stepped up to the plate and were able to overnight us the trophy and all the prizes that we're supposed to get. And so we were really happy that by 10 a.m. the next day after our regional the night before, I was able to give out the prizes to everybody. So people who were playing in the next regional that day of Game of Thrones was able to pull out their Vader mat that they had won and sit down and play, which was good. As for my personal experience in the actual event, we did three rounds of Swiss. I had an okay game in the first game. It was like a true split. We both won with the dark side with a total of four objectives destroyed. So it was a 2 points for each myself and my opponent. In the second round, I played one of our meta mates from Pasadena, and my decks did nothing. The only way I can describe it is my decks did nothing. Like, he started with the light side first, and he was playing a Smuggler's Den version of the Han Jedi setup, and he had the Death Star dialed at 7 when he destroyed his last objective, and he had Yoda with all these enhancements on him, and Han was out and all this stuff, and I was just like, okay, well, that's cool, because that's what my mind's gonna do. It's gonna be great. I'm gonna be able to, you know, it's gonna be pretty competitive. Maybe I can do it in 6, maybe it'll be a 7, maybe it'll be another straight tie. You know, this is gonna be really great. And I shuffled my deck and I drew my hand, and it was terrible, so I mulliganed and I drew my second hand, and it was like C-3PO, 2 comms, an old Ben spirit, and swindled. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is what I have to start off with on my first hand. And so, you know, I dumped all those cards as much as I could. You know, C-3PO is out. I think I attacked with 3PO so I could put cards into the edge battle. You know, drew up my next hand, and it was like all Jedi weenies, but like all of, you know, I hadn't seen any resources yet. So I still only had my 3 starting resources from the objectives and the affiliation card. And, you know, turn 3 or turn 4 after that kind of start, Neil had already won, and that was it. And then I got the round in the bye in the third round, and that was the end of my regional experience. So I wasn't overly thrilled with how my decks panned out, but, you know, what are you going to do? Sometimes that happens.
Yeah. And so what decks did you end up bringing to the event then?
So I brought a Smuggler's Den variation where, like, the week before I had had one of the games very similar to the game in the regional itself, where because I was running 2 pods of that had Old Ben Spirit in it, what essentially had happened in that one game, at just like a regular league night, was I went through pretty much the first 2/3 of my deck, or I guess the first 1/3 of my deck, only seeing cards in that pod. And so if you all know, there's no characters in that pod, it's just enhancements. And if you don't have characters to put those enhancements on, you're kind of really up a creek without a paddle. So I made a quick adjustment. I took out one of those pods and put in the Obi-Wan pod instead, which I still feel is pretty much essentially the same deck with one extra big character. And then that didn't do so well. And then I also ran a pure Imperial pod, which I had actually been having a lot of success with leading up to the regional. It was doing really well. It was winning consistently. It was taking out several objectives and to bring the dial up. So normally what would happen is the dial would be on six and I would take out three objectives in one turn and it would be really like game end. That was it. You know, sorry about that. And I had been really enjoying it. And in a very similar fashion, a couple times I played it, it just, you know, it was like, oh, hey, would you like all of your TIE fighters right now? Cause they're pretty useful when you don't have anything else out there supporting it. Right. And so it was another one of those types of experiences.
Do you remember what pods you were running with your Navy?
I probably could come up with them off the top of my head. I was doing two defense protocols, two Endor gambits, two of the new Vader pods. I think I had one of the Mahdi pod, one of the Tarkin pod.
Maybe two Kuat reinforcements?
No, it was definitely not Kuat reinforcements. And then two other pods that I can't remember off the top of my head.
All right.
Because it was over a week ago.
Yeah. Well, no problem.
Yeah. What about you, Tiny? Did you have a good regional experience, your first regional?
I did. I was really disappointed the first round. We do the pairings, and I jinxed myself, and I looked at Ben, and I said, Ben, you better not give me the bye. And he just kind of smiles and shuffles out the pairings and ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. Sure enough, boom, Tiny gets the first round bye. There's nothing worse than driving multiple hours to get a first round bye. But I got the first round bye. I really dominated that round well, so that was nice.
That's good. It's kind of sometimes can be really tricky facing down the bye.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it can beat you. Like if you go take a nap and you nap too long, then you might lose the next round, and that's basically the bye beating you. But I beat the bye. I stuck around. And then the rest of the day, basically my deck ran exactly how they're supposed to run. The light side deck ran pretty hot. I often had problems like you were talking about where for three turns I'd only have a Twi'lek Smuggler. But I was doing cutesy things like putting two Obi-Wan Spirits and a Trust Your Feelings on it. And then looping them with Message from Beyond just to kind of stall, put all my cards into the edge battle. And unlike you, I was able to come up with that Luke and that Han early enough, turn three or four to where I was able to then turn the tide and win those games.
That sounds like exactly how it worked for everybody else except for me. So that's pretty cool to know that it works consistently for everybody else.
But then again, I didn't break the deck by putting Obi-Wan Kenobi in there.
That's true.
That's a problem. I did try that. I made that same change as you because I had one game online where I went through, I got down to 22 cards, and the only three characters I saw the whole game were a Twi'lek Loyalist, the Terrible Jedi, and one other awful card. And I panicked and put in an Obi-Wan pod. Tested it, and in my objective draws, I got his pod and then two other ones, and I realized if I had gotten a Message from Beyond there instead, I could be looping all my tricks instead of getting one more draw every three turns or something. And so I just decided that it wasn't worth it to add one Obi-Wan into the deck and to lose one copy of that pod. That just wasn't worth it for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, it seems like it's working for everybody else. So I'm not saying that I made a good choice in that regards. It just had freaked me out that one time where all I drew was exactly what you said. Went through almost half the deck. There were no characters I had seen, except for probably in that case, again, probably 3PO and the Twi'lek Loyalist, and just been like, I can't go to a regional with a deck that does this sometimes. Like, even if it does it once in, 10 times, like, if I sit down and I play two light side games and it happens one time, like, that's my regional. And essentially still that's what happened, but.
Yeah, I understand that. I felt the same way. but I just decided that the deck is so strong when it works that making it intentionally weaker to maybe make it ever so slightly more dependable just wasn't worth the trade-off to me. And I did get in a bunch of games in these terrible spots, like in my finals game against Brian Harold. He had out like three Ice Trompers and two other dudes, and all I had was like a Jedi Guardian and another Twi'lek Loyalist or something for maybe three turns or something. And people were walking by the game and going, wow, Tiny is just dead. I don't see what he's going to do. But I did things like put a lightsaber on her, put an Obi-Wan Spirit, put a Trust Your Feelings, and just dinged away for one a turn. And, you know, finally, like, turn five got Han, and then he just kind of cleaned up the board. But I did run into the same problems as you. I was just able to find a way to stall a little bit longer.
Yeah, that sounds like all I was hoping for.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, well. And then my dark side deck was very consistent. I was quite happy with it. I don't remember my games that well, but there weren't many games where I was worried. The Hothbods, they're really effective for a diverse meta. Between the Ice Trompers and the Wampas, you pretty much have answers for the Rebels and the Jedi, depending on what you need. And so it's a pretty consistent deck. It fits a diverse meta quite well, and I was really satisfied with it. At the end of the day, I didn't lose any games, which shocked me. You know, going in, we both talked so much about the tournament rules, and you need a deck that destroys a lot of objectives because all the games are going to be splits. And then I go in and sweep all the games, and I'm like, okay, so maybe that's not an issue.
I think it's still an issue. I think if you looked at everybody else who played in that regional, except for you, everybody else was doing splits most of the time.
Yeah, I think that is still a problem. One way I was able to avoid that a bit is my games didn't go to time because I practiced with my Sith deck to where I played most of my turns in about 30 seconds. Like, if I knew I wasn't going to be attacking, it was just, you know, refresh, deploy, force, boom. And like that. And my opponents kind of looked at me like, whoa, your turn's over already? I was like, yep. Now, if you take your time and take too long, it's not going to screw us because I'm taking my turns ridiculously fast. So that would be one piece of advice I would give to anyone running a Sith control deck. Take the onus of playing quickly. Your opponent may not reciprocate, but if you're playing crazy fast, then if they go into some long think, it's a lot easier for you to say, hey, man, you know, these are timed events. I don't mean to be rude, but can you speed up? If you're playing really fast, I think it will instigate your opponent to do so as well.
So after you're saying that, we only had one game in our regional, at least, that went to time, and they had to finish up. Essentially, I think they finished up with an actual draw on that one. Everything was tie all around the board on that. And the person who were playing at the time, I feel like there was one Sith deck in it, but the other dark side deck was Brian Harold's Imperial Boba Fett deck.
No, his was a Sith deck.
Sith Boba Fett deck, I'm sorry, you're right.
It was basically a Sith control deck with one Boba Fett pod. So they were both running Sith control decks.
Okay, so that makes sense then. So, you know, we had one game go to time.
I'm surprised we only had one. That's pretty impressive, actually.
I got the feeling that for most of the games that were happening, you know, they were happening pretty quick. It was pretty obvious who was winning. Some of them took a little longer and got closer but like I said, everybody was done. You know, we had 70-minute rounds. Everybody was almost done every time by about 60 minutes.
Right. So I guess in short, it looks like most of the decks that did really well in our tournament were Smuggler's Den decks and Sith decks. Greg would be the one exception, but he was substantially lower in points. It was more like me, Neil, and Brian all had something like 12 and 11 points, and then
it was 11, 9, 9, and Greg had 6 with a higher strength of schedule.
Right, so there was a pretty big drop-off to get to Rebel Navy decks. And when I'm looking at the overall regional reports so far that I have in front of me, it looks like we have almost all of them were running Smuggler's Den decks. In fact, they were identical to the Smuggler's Den deck, except for two of them that I'm seeing And one of them was really interesting. I really want to get Reed on the podcast from Texas, because looking at the top four, that is a crazy meta that they're playing in. No one was playing the Smuggler's Den deck, and no one was playing a straight Sith Control deck. So it makes me wonder, like, is this just a really good Rebel deck, or is it more that this is a meta that has not, I don't really want to say fully embrace the best decks, but maybe they've, you know, gone in their own direction, which is fine. Every meta has its own feel to it, but it just looks like a completely foreign meta than what everyone else has been playing, which is interesting.
I just assume it's one of those situations where, and you see this happen in a lot of other games, where you have a meta where, you know, maybe they listen to the podcast, maybe they don't. I mean, it's totally fine. I don't think, you know, one way or the other on that. But you see it in the Game of Thrones. We had somebody come in the Game of Thrones in our regional. He came all the way from, he came from Arizona. He came all the way from Arizona and is the best player in his meta in Arizona. And then when he showed up and he played a group that was slightly more diverse, and we kind of maybe have a little bit more influence from outside sources, because Tiny and John Bruno, they have direct inputs from, you know, metas in the US, metas in Europe, and are always constantly trying to build better decks. You know, this guy who came in from Arizona sat down with a deck that he thought was really good because he beats all his friends, and then all of a sudden, you know, you can't get through maybe the second round or the third round of the regional because you all of a sudden you have these decks that people have been working on and they're really kind of svelte and are capable of withstanding any shortcomings that other decks might not. And so maybe this is the same thing that's happening in Reed's meta in Texas, where somebody had some luck with a Rebel deck and maybe an Imperial deck, and then everybody else started to play those, and it kind of just spiraled into this thing where the Rebel decks and the Imperial decks are firing on an efficiency that makes it so that somebody who is just coming in is like, oh, I'll try a Jedi deck. If they're not thinking about making the best Jedi deck, might lose more consistently than somebody who's like, well, I think Jedi are strong. I'm going to work on a strong Jedi deck. Here's a strong Jedi deck.
Yeah, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I remember when we started playing, we thought Rebels were way above the curve.
Yeah, I believe you said that at one point that the pod was broken.
We had
a broken pod, that the Rebels with the blaster emplacements was just too good, that nobody would ever win. We're going to have to run all of these chuds. I mean, I feel like your first Sith deck, Tiny, might have run corporate exploitations, right?
It
just
sure
for the
did.
Chuds.
Just for the heavy blaster emplacement.
Yep. And so, yep. Yeah, I can understand why, you know, in some situations, why that might not have gone past that. If you were playing in a meta where the people you were playing with really like Imperial, the blaster emplacement against Imperial is still really good, regardless of how you slice it.
Yep, definitely. And so, Reed, if you're out there, hit me up, Tiny Grimes. I'd love to test with you, man. I always like to test with people that are running different, interesting, cool decks. So I'd love to get together online and do some testing. Or maybe you can fly out to California and we can test in person. So, Ben, did any decks catch you by surprise? Were you stunned by anyone's choices? Or is it pretty much we have a limited card pool, there really are no surprise decks out there?
I was not surprised. With the league, I had seen a lot of the deck variations that people had tried to play. We had two brothers come in who were not part of the meta, who lived down in San Diego and had heard about the regional through the podcast. And so they showed up. They were both running Rebel Navy decks. Despite the fact that they were Rebel Navy decks, they were Rebel Navy decks that I had seen and even had tested at that point, because I had tested as soon as the first Force pack with Hoth stuff came out. I was like, ooh, I'm going to put this stuff in. Rebels are going to be great. I did the same thing, and I was like, oh, they're still kind of really luck-related, aren't they? I'm going to have to hold off on this for a little while. And I think this, you know, they came in, they had their Rebels and they had their Navy stuff, and they were like, let's play. And so I think they had a very similar experience on that. But at the same time, it wasn't shocking to see which objective sets they had chosen for their decks.
Right. I think the biggest surprise I saw was Brian Harold's deck, in which he splashed in a single copy of Boba Fett.
Right. That was also surprising to me.
It was really surprising because in our game, I'm pretty sure, and I could be wrong on this, but I don't think he played a single card from that pod even. And it just seems to me that playing Imperials to get Mahdi is probably still the way to go, even though Boba is pretty darn good against a Smuggler's Den environment. I just feel like there's not quite enough support for him yet. If you do run against a Rebel deck, he's pretty much pointless, and Rebel Assault just kills him instantly.
Before you even have a chance to put the Mandalorian armor on him.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to ask you about your preparation, even though I think everyone knows what it would be.
Sure, go for it.
So, Ben, what was your preparation like going into the event?
So, we have our weekly league events. So, that was essentially what I was using as my preparations for regionals, which meant that about 2 weeks before, so that's essentially what the timeline was we had our league final tournament where the new force pack came out, but we didn't use it in the league finals. I lost in the top four of that. I then built a couple decks, first with Rebels, then kind of a new Imperial deck, and started testing those. The Rebel deck didn't do very well. The Imperial deck did very well. And so for 2 weeks straight, I essentially tested that. On the second week, I switched over to the Smuggler's Den version of the Jedi deck. You know, we had talked about it that week already, where essentially I pulled out all of the stuff. I pulled out all the Obi-Wan pods in and put in Message from Beyond and was just ready to go with that. And that did, like I said, that did really well. For that entire 2 week span, I was doing really well with it. And then probably it was like the last game of the last day of testing when I drew into the, you know, that terrible opening where you went through half your deck and didn't see anything except for enhancements and events. And I mentioned it to somebody else and they're like, oh yeah, that happened to me. And so in that moment, I was like, I can't play this deck the way it is. And that was when I made my decision to switch into Obi-Wan. But essentially, I had been spending 2 weeks just kind of testing the same decks over and over again and playing them, and made a little bit of adjustments to the Navy deck, made a little bit of adjustments to the Jedi deck, and then showed up to the regional ready to play when it started.
Nice. Yeah, I think my preparation was fairly similar.
You know, so you probably had some more time spending it on our Octagon, right? Another couple.
Yeah, right. I mean, I started with the 2 weeks before the event in the league, but I'm also trying to prep for a Game of Thrones regional the same day, and I have a lot of commitments with people that want to test with me for that. So I was kind of torn there, but I did similar to what you did. And then I was able to, on Octagon, test out changes. So, like, I made the same change you did with Obi-Wan. I tested it on Octagon. I didn't like it. And then the night before, or no, 2 nights before the event, I made big changes to my Sith deck. So my Sith deck was a pretty straightforward, you know, two of deck where I had two Mahdis, two Vaders, two Palpatines, and then I had, all three of the Hoth pods, and I think I had one Council of the Sith. And that's what I had been playing. And I realized, talking to my friend Agnos as we're playing, that the Ice Tromper is great. I already knew that. That's why I was playing the Hawk Pod. But with tactics icons, he's absolutely ridiculous. And I'm looking at the deck and thinking, there just aren't that many tactics icons in this deck. There are three in the whole deck, and one is edge dependent. And that got me thinking, you know, how can I add in more tactics icons? And so I went to something like pulling out both Mahdi pods and putting in two Cruel Interrogations to get four tactics icons. And I played a couple games with that. And it was good, but it just, you know, losing the Mahdi pod loses those resources. And so there were a couple games where I was resource starved. And so that's why I ended up going with my final build of two Vader, two Palpatine, one Cruel Interrogations, one Mahdi, one Council of the Sith, and then the three Hoth pods.
Seems like an interesting combination. I feel like, you know, from what I can tell from the response from when you posted that deck, that people thought you were crazy for posting. You know, we had been talking about how you wanted to have duplicates of a lot of objectives, and that the best way to have consistency in your deck was have, you know, two of the better objectives that you wanted, so that, you know, if there was a reason why you were running one objective, if you couldn't have a reason for having running two of them, maybe it wasn't the best objective in your deck, and yet here you were wanting one of. So what was your thought process? You know, how did you come to a place that you felt was it was acceptable to be running just one X copies of four of your pods?
It basically comes down to one word, redundancy. And so what that means is you want to be able to predict your deck. So if you want a big character, like I want Palpatine, well, then you got to run two of his pod and you have to run 10 pods because you want Palpatine. If you want Vader, same thing. But if you want resources, you're not necessarily locked into one particular pod. So for instance, Mahdi's pod and pod 20, the Council of the Sith, both give resources. Now Mahdi is better at it. So if all you want are resources, then just pack into a pod 20. But if you just want resources more generally, but you want other things, then you might have to branch out. And so the same thing happened with tactics icons. So I basically wanted tactics icons and resources, but I wasn't particularly committed to one card. Like, I like Mahdi, but I wasn't thinking I have to draw Mahdi. It was more I have to draw resources. So if that's the case, I can use Mahdi and Pod 20. And if I want tactics icons, well, Pod 20 gives me one tactics icon. Cruel Interrogations gives me two. And so what it was a juggling act of trying to get the right level of redundancy for tactics icons, for resources, and for defensive units. So in the end, I almost took out Mahdi entirely for a second copy of Council of the Sith because it gave me more draw and one more tactics icon, but it made me lose Mahdi and the two stormtroopers who are quite good for defense. And if I were to run the deck again, I will be testing without Mahdi and putting in a second copy of Pod 20 just to see if that might be more effective. But man, Mahdi is good, and I have a hard time pulling him out.
I was going to say, so I had two questions, or one comment and then another question for you. With Mahdi, I mean, he not only is good in terms of his resource-generating ability, but he has the extra removing of a focus, right? So if you get into a situation where your opponent can lock down Vader or Palpatine and has a situation where they have three focus tokens on them, having Mahdi where you can pull off that third one so that they're refreshed right away as opposed to being locked down for a turn seems to be a really good situation. And that's always why I've really not only liked him for his resources but for his ability.
Yeah, and I totally agree, and that's why I ended up leaving him in, because it's not just resources. He's just a phenomenal character. But in this particular deck, with the Ice Trompers and with Jedi being so good, it might be worth it to give that up to be able to have more chances to Ice Tromper followed by Tactics Icons and have a bigger hand to win edge battles against the Jedi. So that's where that trade-off comes in. But you're right, Mahdi is just the MVP for removing Tactics Icons.
And so that was the next thing I was going to say, is do you want to describe to listeners, maybe they're having a hard time visualizing, what about Tactics and Ice Trompers make it such a potent combination?
Okay, so this is how it works. If they attack with, we'll give the best case scenario, they attack with Yoda with just by himself with seven enhancements on him. They have to win the edge battle for Yoda to do much in the first place, right? So they put in a whole bunch of edge cards to make sure they win that edge battle. If you have an Ice Tromper on the board, all you have to do is block with a tactics guy. They attack with Yoda, they win the edge battle. Before they can strike, you say, I'll use my Ice Tromper, take Yoda out of the battle, put a damage on him, and then strike with my guy with the tactics icon and focus Yoda. And so you can do that with anyone that's attacking. It's a really incredibly powerful tool. Once you see this in action, you'll be astounded. The Ice Tromper doesn't even have to be in the engagement. But I often like to put him in because if I win, then I can strike and then remove him from the engagement.
Right. I mean, the only thing I would caution people on in that scenario, I mean, it is a dream scenario, is once they start putting cards in the edge battle, if your card that you're using for your tactics icon has low health, watch out for those heats of battle.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Because that would be the only downside to happen there.
Right. And that's one reason why, well, another reason why I ran Pod 20 is I decided that Twist of Fates were going to be huge in regionals. And so this deck packs three of them. And so I was often able to get in a situation where, you know, not only do they have to win multiple edge battles to be able to strike with these characters if I have Ice Trompers out, I also have Twist of Fates so that I can then cancel any heat of battles that come along. So basically, Ice Trompers plus Tactics are amazing in the deck, and that's why there are weird things like one copy of Cruel Interrogations. I want two copies. I got very close to running 11 pods just to put in two more Tactics icons. And then I realized if I get Palpatine, I win. So it's just foolish to go over 10 because then I'm giving up the redundancy in Palpatine. So basically, to summarize why I ran this crazy deck, one word, redundancy.
So one of the things that people will try to do coming into a regional season or any type of competitive card game season, this is for people out there who have never done this before, is you'll show up. You'll have been reading about it on the boards. You've listened to our podcast. Maybe you've listened to somebody else's podcast, seen some videos. And it's everybody everywhere is saying how awesome or consistent or whatever the word is you want to describe it, the Smuggler's Den deck is. And you know, it's done really well. It's won a bunch of regionals already. You know, I'm going to go in playing the Smuggler's Den, and you're just going to go in there. What tends to happen, especially at this point in a regional season or a competitive season, is decks start to appear that have the ability to upset specifically that deck. And so that if you match up against it, you end up losing horribly because the deck is designed to take out all the specific tricks and counters and all the things that you have in place that have made your deck good for the first couple of events. It's called teching for the meta.
One specific example that we've seen of this is over at Top Tier Gaming, which is a new Star Wars LCG site. Doesn't have a ton of content yet, but they are putting stuff out. The players over there are really good, so I would definitely pay attention to what they're doing. But they put an article out on how to beat the Smuggler's Den, and it had a lot of useful tips. You can run things like Heart of the Empire to get Force Stasis, and there is no escape. You can run Detained. You can run Boba Fett. And if you run all of these in the same deck, you are probably going to beat the Smuggler's Den deck. What is the problem, though, Ben?
So the problem is that once you have this deck laid out, it actually has a lot of openings and weaknesses to other popular decks that are out there in the meta. And so specifically, if you're running all of the pods that you just listed, a really fast, good, consistent, maybe not consistent, but maybe lucky is a better word, Rebel deck is going to take this deck down every time.
Yeah, this is one of the tricks of teching for a meta. I'm all for teching for a meta. That's what competitive people do. If you want to win, you need to get a good feel for your meta and tech for it. The problem is you can run into the two people running Rebel decks, and if they're skilled, that could be the end of your day. So you need to be very careful when you tech for a meta. You have to pretty much know, okay, I know the following people are running the Smuggler's Den deck or something very close. No one's running Rebels. Then it's kind of safe to do this. My personal feeling is you should be running a deck that can beat both of these archetypes. And I feel like my dark side was able to, and at least it was on that particular day, but I've had good success with it. But you can, in theory, run a deck that's heavily teched to beat any other deck. I mean, pretty much any card game, there should be a way to beat every deck. It might be a terrible deck that beats that one deck. Like maybe it beats the one deck and then loses to every other deck in the meta. But there's almost always some answer to whatever the top deck is.
And so specifically in this case, the deck that was posted on Top Tier Gaming uses the ability to capture units and pull them off the board after they've striked, and then making your opponent go through the objective health capacity to get those units back and redeploy them, have essentially, you know, using that as a way to slow down, essentially stall out the Smuggler's Den until you can, you know, get the dial to 12 or take out enough objectives.
Yep, and I think it's an interesting deck. I mean, Detained is probably the card that Smuggler's Den fears most because you can't Obi-Wan spirit against it. You can't use your shields against it. It's just, boom, your guy's captured. That's that. But a smart player is going to see that you're running that pod, and he's going to save his cancels. C-3PO is going to sit there. He's going to hold his cancels in hand. He's going to hold that counterstroke. He's going to keep C-3PO on the board. He's not just going to attack willy-nilly into your detained, if that person is skilled, at least.
If the person is aware of what is being played in terms of the pods that are played against them, yeah.
Exactly. I think Force Stasis is a great card. Like, I think that's the best card against the deck. The reason being that you don't really want to cancel that card. It doesn't actually alter the board state. It just slows you down a bit. And so you look at that and you go, ugh, I should really save my cancels for Force Lightning, for There Is No Escape. I can't really afford to use them on Force Stasis. So I really do like that card as a meta card against the deck.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is unfortunately carried in a less than stellar pod, but it is a good... I mean, it's always one of those cards. I definitely played somebody the week after regionals, or maybe it was the week before regionals, and they were playing this pod, and I was like, wow, you're playing this pod? Like, you know, why are you playing it? And they played Force Stasis, and he was like, that's the reason I'm playing this pod. This is the only reason. And he played it, and he kind of, like, slowed me down for a turn. I ended up winning. This was Neil. He ended up going to the regionals and placing third. So, you know, he learned his lesson pretty quickly on that one. But I can understand why, specifically against the Smuggler's Den deck, this would be a good pause on a round. Oh, you've put on 5 enhancements on Yoda? How about he just sits out for this set of battles that are, you know, this conflict phase?
Yeah, so let's talk about this pod a little bit and whether it's worth running. So the first question is, the pod itself, or the objective itself, the Heart of the Empire, 3 resources. If it's destroyed, you lose. Do you think this is a good objective or a bad objective?
This is such an interesting meta choice objective, right? Because if you're running it in the right type of deck, you could run this objective and almost use it as a way of teasing your opponent to attack it, right? Because your opponent sees it as an easy win on this one. If they take out this objective that only has 10 health capacity, which is 5 less than you would need on average for taking out 3 objectives, they win the game. I mean, like, how much easier is that? You only have to, it's equivalent to taking out 2 objectives as opposed to 1. You take out something that has a lot of resources. However, it comes down to this thing where if you're going after that objective, you're only going after 1 objective. And it can be very frustrating if, you know, somehow the Sith wins or the dark side wins in this matchup and you haven't even taken out any objectives because you couldn't take out their 1 objective that you were trying to take out to win the game.
Yeah, I feel like it's an amazing objective in tournament season as a sucker's bet.
Yep.
Like, if you go for this objective, I feel like that's a huge blunder. Because even if you start doing damage to it, all they have to do is drop a Coruscant Defense Fleet, and you kind of go, oh, there's 5 more damage I have to do. Great.
You could also be running it with Death and Despair and be putting on defense upgrade onto it as well.
Exactly. So I just feel like it's one of those objectives that maybe against Rebels would have a shot at taking it out. But whenever I run my Jedi deck, I want to spread my damage out. I don't send all my guys after 1 objective. I feel like it's a large mistake to actually go for it. And so in that regard, it's good. But on the flip side, and I know this is going to sound crazy, I don't like the fact that it has 3 resources. I don't ever want to triple focus something and then have my opponent know, okay, for the next so many turns, he has this many resources and, you know, I can plan appropriately. I just don't like doing that.
Nope, it's really tough. And I mean, as much as it's a sucker's bet, when for the light side player facing you, it's always going to be tempting. In that one round, you're like, oh, if I use all 3 of these resources on this objective and then the other resource, like, you know, if I focus out everything and put out these cards, I'm going to win this game and this turn. And then if you don't, you've triple focused an objective that will essentially be out for the next two turns, because we don't have a lot of ways of removing focus from objectives at this point in time.
Yeah. And then, of course, on the other side, since it's Sith only, you're probably not getting Mahdi if you're running this. So you are giving up resource cards in addition to double and triple focusing a resource card. So you're giving up a ton of resources to play this.
Right.
And unlike the other objectives, it doesn't have useful text other than the fact that you get more resources. So you're giving up useful text. You're giving up good Imperial pods just to play this. So for me, the objective is kind of I mean, it's good against a new player who thinks they're just going to knock it out. But against an experienced player, you're really not gaining anything from the objective itself.
I mean, the only way you would be able to do it is if you ran maybe like six pods of Navy and then four pods of Sith. And this, you know, you had the Sith affiliation as your affiliation card. But then you wouldn't be really running a deck that had Vader and Palpatine in it potentially. You would just be running this and something else. It's like part of a tech or a meta, teching against a certain meta idea, right? So maybe trying to think what would be useful for that. Like if you were running Mahdi, the Devastator, and you had the Coruscant Defense Fleet, so you had an attacking and defending kind of Star Destroyer card. You do get some Sith events, so if you were running Vader, you would have an equal number of cards that could do damage when you played them using Vader's ability. Gives you another resource. You know, I don't know what other objectives you would run in that type of deck. So, but at the same time, you're not running the standard Sith deck. You're not running a standard Navy deck. So you'd have to come up with the right combination to do something like that.
Yeah, and I guess my evaluation is putting it in a Sith deck. I'm not thinking outside of the box of some new cool deck. And it could very feasibly work in a different deck that I'm not thinking of. I'm just talking about putting it in a Sith deck as an answer to the Smuggler's Den. I'm not sure that I'm a big fan of it.
But there are some really killer cards in it. So let's talk about the specific cards.
Yeah, I think we already talked about Force Stasis. And Ben, it's awesome.
Yeah, all right, Force Stasis, awesome. That's easy, done.
Yeah. Kuat Security Team, totally broken.
The best card in the game.
Yeah, the best card for discarding so you can draw more cards. I agree.
Yeah, I agree as well.
Sith Library, great. Always love having resources. And then you get, to me, the most controversial card in the entire game. There is no escape.
And what makes you think it's... What makes you say it's so controversial?
Because it's both the most powerful card in the game, and that you can reset the entire board. So the Smuggler's Den gets Yoda with four enhancements and a Guardian and Han, and they all have Obi-Wan spirits, and they are going nowhere. And then you drop a There Is No Escape, you smile, and you win the game. The only problem is it cost you four, so you pretty much had to telegraph it, not play anything, and then they just go, oh, what's this in my hand? Counter-Strike. And then the dark side player goes, no! And that's why I call it the most controversial card in the game.
Seems less controversial and more blind luck if you can pull it off. I mean, you might have had that whole plan out from the very beginning. You would have it maybe in the same deck as an Emperor's Web objective card, right? To reduce the cost of it to three. I definitely played somebody against this with this recently. I forget what the outcome of this game was. I feel like I still ended up winning as I was the light side. But they had three resources open. I was like, oh, are you going to Imperial? Or are you going to Force Lightning me? And he looked at me and smiled and was like, yes, I'm going to Force Lightning you. That's exactly what I'm going to do. And then he played There Is No Escape. And I was like, oh, all right, that's another option. I suppose that works as well.
Yeah, the problem for me with the card is you're not playing this unless you're getting crushed, right? So, like, if you have all your resource cards out, you're not playing that because you're going to then lose them all your resource chuds, that is.
Right.
So you're basically playing this in a bad position. So it really is being telegraphed. And if you're in such a bad position, the Jedi player is probably stockpiling his tricks.
Right.
And his tricks are going to be C-3PO. And they're going to be Counter-Strike, and once you show a single card from this pod, they're immediately thinking, well, gotta have an answer for that card. And so you have to disguise this so well, unless you can couple it with something like Cruel Interrogations or an interrogation droid. But then we're back to, do you have the resources to do that? That's 6 or 7 resources that you're going to need to be able to play this card in combination with a card to make sure they don't have a cancel. It just seems so difficult to pull off that I personally have not found it to be successful. I've seen it 3 times lately. All 3 times I canceled it. And all 3 times they went, well, I guess that's the game.
We have a reset in a Game of Thrones that everybody uses. And when new players come in, they're like, wow, everybody seems to use that card. I really don't like that card. But eventually they drink the Kool-Aid. Everybody runs it. You know it's there. There's some way of resetting the board almost very consistently in your opponent's plot deck. And this game just doesn't have that yet. I don't know if FFG has any intentions of doing that. Maybe it's one of those things where they just feel like it's not part of the Star Wars universe to be able to reset the whole board at one time. But it does lead to these situations where things can start to spiral out of control. I mean, if you're talking about the ideal situation for your Jedi deck, you know, the Smuggler's Den deck, you want to have Yoda out with some protectors and Han and maybe Luke, and then they all have, you know, maybe you have all of your old Ben spirits, and Luke has Trust Your Feelings, and Yoda has 2 lightsabers, and, you know, it just becomes bonkers. And you really wish in that moment, right, as a dark side player, where maybe you had a slow start and you're starting to see your cards, that there was some way of clearing the board and allowing you to catch up. But, you know, right now there just isn't that. And it's interesting that the one card that allows you to do it just isn't overly viable in the current state of the meta.
Yeah, it almost feels like to me it needs an errata that it cannot be canceled. And that's probably too strong the other way. But if you're going to pay that much for it and have to really plan multiple turns around using it, it has to be more of a guarantee that you're going to be able to play it.
Right.
And so maybe that means if you're going to play this card, you need to run something like the new Darth Vader pod so that you can have Imperial Suppression that you can couple with the card. And then you have to kill C-3PO via Vader's reaction. But if you have Vader out to be able to use his reaction, you know, are you really using There Is No Escape if you have Vader out?
And right, so if you already have the ability to be picking off people using Vader, do you need There Is No Escape?
Right, so basically we're describing the ideal scenario in which this card can work, and it just seems like a scenario that doesn't even come around. So I would love to hear from our listeners of people who have been able to use this card to devastating effect and win games, because I know there's people out there who have been able to do that. And so what I'm really curious is, are you doing this against less skilled players, or are you able to actually pull this off against the top players in your meta?
And you can do that. You can get in contact with us, Tiny or myself, by emailing smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com or by visiting our Facebook group, which is The Smuggler's Den on Facebook.
Yep, and we've got a lot of good conversation happening over there. Before our first regional, I know, we had a lengthy talk about Rebels, and everyone was proposing different Rebel builds and really trying to suss out a good Rebel deck. And I think everyone knows where Ben and I fall on it at the moment, but there are a lot of people who are in strong disagreement with us that there are good Rebel decks and that they are seeing them and that we should be trying them out.
It seems to be very consistent that every time we post something about it, there's always somebody who's like, no, Rebels are okay. I can prove it.
Yep.
Sometimes they prove it, sometimes they don't.
I've actually had a number of people that I started testing with on Octagon, and that's the deck I tested against most. You know, anyone who claimed to have a good Rebel deck, I said, all right, awesome, come whip me. I want to see how it works. And I don't think I lost to a single one of the Rebel decks. So if there is someone out there that has that great Rebel deck, come whip me with it. I want to see it work. All right. I'd like to make a quick announcement before we continue. Card Game DB is going to be having actually a series of tournaments for all of the card games, and the Star Wars one will be starting up soon. It's going to be an online tournament. It's probably going to run the Lackey plugin, so it can be used by Linux and Macs instead of Octagon, which is really just rooted in the PC world at the moment. So keep your eyes peeled for that. It looks like it's going to be run by Tragic.
That sounds pretty fun.
Since there's no new pack, since it's still on the boat, apparently circling the globe somehow.
I think they took the long way. They forgot that there's a direct route across the Pacific from China to, like, Los Angeles, to the port of Los Angeles.
So we normally don't like to review cards that are outside of the entirety of their pack, because our review might be way off base once we see the rest of the pack.
Maybe. Even when we see the rest of the pack, our reviews are normally entirely off base. So that's totally fine with me sometimes. It's normally when it's just a single cards without the rest of their objective.
Yeah, exactly. So we decided to review the new objective set in the second Force pack, the Search for Skywalker, Jabba's Orders.
Sure. So Jabba's Orders is one of our first looks at how Scum and Villainy might play out in terms of an affiliation. We've seen some of the spoilers for Edge of Darkness, which is the box set coming out hopefully next month. And so what we've seen now is in this next Hoth-based set of Force packs is actually going to be a Scum and Villainy objective set. And so it is called Jabba's Orders. Jabba's Orders is the objective. It's one resource, 5 health capacity, and it has a reaction. After this objective enters play, look at your opponent's hand.
And this is a really, really strong reaction. Since your opponent's goal is to knock out your objectives, even if you don't flop this, when it comes out, you're going to get all this information about your opponent's hands. That is very useful.
I think it's one of those things where, unlike, what we've seen in other games, specifically Game of Thrones, where that hand information is really vital, maybe, mid-game or even early game. Like, if you know early what they have, you can do some things. Here, it's slightly less... It seems to be, right off the bat, slightly less powerful. Because, sure, you may know what's in their hand to start off turn one, but how many times are cards that you have in turn one still in your hand by turn two or turn three? And the same happens when it comes up as the objective if they destroy something, right? So maybe, the light side was attacking, and they've taken out your objective, but they use all their cards in the edge battle. So this card comes out in the refresh phase, and your refresh phase, and they have no cards left in their hand, and you get no information out of it.
Yeah, it's not going to be really strong, but I feel like especially against a Smuggler's Den deck where they're saving back their tricks, it's nice to know what they have.
Right. And what really makes this objective powerful is not specifically it by itself, but it with one of the events that goes along with the objective, right?
Exactly. Get Me Solo. It only costs 1-2 force icons, an event that reads, play only during your turn. So it's actually a very limited event, but you can name a unit and then reveal an opponent's hand, capture all copies of the named unit in that hand. This will be incredibly powerful with Jabba's Orders. So say, for instance, they have, played a big character, they haven't played many more, they're resource starved, there's a good chance they have another big character in their hand. Being able to flip over Jabba's Orders, see that they have a Luke, and then just grab it with Get Me Solo is going to be a really strong play.
Yeah, and I feel like it's one of those cards that potentially has this ability to set up a really one-sided start for the dark side. If you flop Jabba's Orders, know what's in their hand, and you get Me Solo on the first turn, and maybe they happen to have 2 copies of one of their big, it happens to me all the time where I have maybe 2 copies of Yoda at the start of the game. I'm like, oh, that's okay. I'll play one, and then I'll get the edge battle, 5 icons out of it. And you can, on that first turn, play Get Me Solo and capture both copies of their Yoda from minute one. Or maybe they have 3 copies of their protector. Could you imagine if they had, in a 6-card hand, they were like, oh, look at that, 3 protectors. This is pretty good. I'll keep it.
Yep.
And you captured all 3 of them with just 1 event card?
I think even if I didn't flop Jabba's Orders, if I was playing against the Smuggler's deck, I would take that chance, and I would play Get Me Solo, name the Guardian, And if you pick up two Guardians, wow, that's a real game changer, turn one.
Yep. And it doesn't say that it has to be captured at the same objective.
Yeah, that's interesting. I wonder how that's going
to
work.
So you might be able to play it on different, you know, separate them and put them on different objectives, which we've seen from some of the stuff that is spoiled in Edge of Darkness actually plays into the scum and villainy thematic side of it, where objectives get stronger the more things you have captured on them.
Yeah, definitely. Having stuff captured at objectives is going to be huge as time goes on.
Yeah. Okay. And so what else do we have in the pod?
We have what I consider to be just such a good card that I might splash this pod just for this card. And that's Jabba's Palace. It is a 2-cost enhancement, which provides one resource. And you might think, that's a bit pricey. Aren't they 1-for-1? The difference is this one has 3 force icons. It enhances your play area and gives you the text, objectives gain +1 damage capacity, which is huge, huge for dark side, as that's the light side's objective. And then also, it's not limited. So you can play this and a Sith library and just start piling up those early resources.
You know, what's interesting to point out here is it has a trait that we've never seen before, which is base. So I'm wondering if that's a trait that we'll be seeing more interplay with, where you have these cards that act as bases for other effects that happen, you know, centered around that affiliation.
Yeah, I think almost certainly we will see that.
We also have 2 copies of the Weequay Elite. And so it's a character, mercenary, cost 4, 1 force icon, 2 health capacity. It comes with 2 character damage and 1 tactics, non-edge-dependent icons, and has the text, reduce the cost to play this unit by 2 if there is at least 1 card captured at any of your objectives. So what looks like a pretty expensive card to begin with, 4 costs for 2 health capacity. I mean, that's the same as playing Boba Fett, right? So, you know, why would you play this guy as opposed to Boba Fett? Becomes slightly better when you can reduce him based off of something that is already interplaying with the rest of the pod and the objective, which is he allows you to go capture cards just by naming them using Get Me Solo. And so, you know, you have it. It becomes at that point a 2-for-2 with character damage and a tactics icon.
Yeah, I'd have to say at 4-for-2, it's the worst card in the game. At 2-for-2, it's easily the best card in the game. If you're playing a defensive dark side death, to be able to have a defensive guy with 2 unit damage and a tactics for 2 is
for non-edge dependent.
Yeah, that's pretty much insane.
Yeah, it's a strong card. I would like to point out that it's definitely not the worst character we've seen, because we have already know about that with the Anzani Elite that will be coming out that we just know about in a vacuum, which was that neutral character that was 4-for-1 health capacity or 3-for-1 health capacity and had 2 tactics icons on it. I think we already said that was the worst card in the game. We can't keep adding worse cards, I think.
It's a category rather than an exclusive description.
It's not a club of one, it's a club of many.
Yes, exactly. When you're hyperbolic, you have to have categories.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, and then the last card in the pod has been getting a lot of flack so far, and that's the Jawa Trading Crawler. It costs 3. It only has 1 force icon, but it does have 2 resources, and it's a vehicle with some edge-dependent icons, not many. But then it says, resources generated by this unit can only be used to play vehicle or droid units. Now, if you look in the rest of its pod, there are no vehicle or droid units other than itself.
I mean, I just have to hope, and people have pointed this out, that scum and villainy might have more than your average number of vehicle and droid units. And so in a bubble, it just looks like terrible. But when you think about kind of the big bounty hunters that are possible to come out, so IG-88 and Forlom, they're both bounty hunters that will probably be in Scum and Villainy. They're both droids. We've already seen Slave 1. All of those other bounty hunters have ships that they could be playing. Those will all be vehicles. So it might be one of those things where in a bubble, it looks terrible. But if you're running 2 of them and, you know, the rest of your pods have things like Slave 1 and, you know, these other starships that are all related to the smugglers and the villainy peoples, of the Star Wars universe. It you know, it might not be terrible. It also could be used to pay for a second copy of itself, right? So you can put Jawa Trader and Crawler into play and then use its resources to put the next Jawa Trader and Crawler into play, and then all of a sudden you have four resources that can be used on vehicles and droids.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true, but one lightsaber deflection and you paid three for nothing. That's my big problem with it. If it was an enhancement, I would like it a lot more than as an actual unit that can die very easily.
I think it's one of those things where you have to probably be thinking about it as you're probably going to lose this card right away. And so you put it out, you put two resources on it right away. And then, you know, if you lose it, you lose it. But once it's, you know, two resources, your opponent might not care about it as much because, you know, it's not going to attack. It's just going to sit there for two turns until you can clear it off. I mean, but it does clear off with things that we already have, right? So Endor's Gambit allows you to clear an extra one off a vehicle when you refresh. So you could always, you could play, use two on it and clear it off right away. We also know, you know, it's a unit, so it also would trigger with Mahdi. You know, Mahdi allows you to take an extra focus off a unit. So there are already lots of ways out there, maybe not synergistically, that allow you to remove the focus that you would use to pay for things on this. You know, because it overlaps in that kind of category of vehicle and unit, there's a bunch of stuff that does that. And so, you know, maybe in the long run, it becomes a slightly more viable card.
Yeah, and it's actually quite viable with the pod that I would immediately put with this pod, which is Cruel Interrogations.
Right, which has droids in it.
Exactly. The Interrogator droids are droids, and so they would be free then if you used the two resources for that. And then, of course, Cruel Interrogations will just flip over and immediately capture a card and turn on the Weak Way Elite and just get that ball rolling so much faster.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, who knows?
So my question for you, Ben, is today in the current meta without seeing any more of that pack, what do you think of this pod? Is it viable in the current meta?
Almost. I'm going to say almost viable. I think it'll be, if you were to just give somebody this pod, right, with the cards that we had right now, they could build a deck that would allow them to have a little bit more fun with what we have with Boba Fett as it is right now. I don't think it would be a stellar deck. I don't know if it would win any more consistently than a Boba Fett deck does right now. Just that it is it's an almost viable card in the current meta, or a pod in the current meta.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like you can build a different Sith control deck than what you normally have, but I feel like it's probably going to be worse. But I'll try it for sure. With Cruel Interrogations, Palpatine, Vader, probably take out Mahdi and perhaps one of the Hoth pods, or perhaps both of the Hoth pods, and put in Boba Fett and this. The funny thing is, I still don't think Boba Fett's viable even with this. Like, in the current meta, I would run this without Boba Fett.
Right. Yeah, it's just another way of having Boba Fett, though. You don't, you know. I know what you mean, and I totally agree with you. Boba Fett still is fairly weak. He's one Rebel Assault away from being useless.
Yeah, and if you ran this with Take Them Prisoner, and you did some sort of rainbow deck, nearly every objective in the deck is capturing cards, and that could be really interesting for these weak way elites to get them online even faster.
Yeah, I mean, that would be one way of doing it. I've definitely seen, you know, people in the last couple of weeks have been trying out some more rainbow decks in our meta. And if you're playing it with the right set of cards, I feel that they're actually, you know, not as unviable as we have said they are, or potentially as unviable as other people have said they are.
Yeah, in fact, Gabe last week brought a really interesting Rebel deck in which he was running Rebel, Jedi, and Smugglers, big guys from all of them, and just running one copy of the pod that allows you to splash more easily. And it worked out really well. You know, most of the games he got that pod out. The games where he didn't, he was able to enhance one of his other objectives so that he could get these characters out. And it worked surprisingly well. I still beat him something like 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 games, but I was stunned that it was a functional deck. So I do think there's something to be had there.
Yeah, I think so too.
All right, so hopefully with the rest of the pack, we'll be able to give a more full evaluation of the pod next podcast, assuming that the boat does actually make it.
If the boat ever actually is allowed to dock.
Yes. All right, so I think it's time for everyone's favorite segment of the show, the pod quiz. All right, Ben, what do you have for me? Are you going to choose one at random, or are you going to cheat like usual?
Well, seeing as you were the one who started with the cheating, I'm going to cheat like usual. All right, Tiny, so I have for you, chosen non-randomly,
the perfect... Non-randomly? That's not fair.
I know, I can't believe it. How? Who'd do something like that? A card, objective set, that I'm sure you're going to hit right out of the park, but I don't know 100% how out of the park. And so the objective that I would like you to tell me what cards are in it is objective number 6.
Number 6. I believe number 6 is rescue. I don't know the name of the objective. The one where you remove a damage from a unit in play.
That is it? Last minute rescue?
Last minute rescue. Okay. And the cards in that pod are Return of the Jedi, one copy. There is Force Rejuvenation, one copy.
Yes.
There is, it's the one where it removes all damage from an objective, and it has a picture of an R2-D2 looking dude.
Sure, Emergency Repair.
There you go. There's three of them. It has the Redemption.
Right, I was going to say there's the big one.
Yep. And the last card is... I'm torn between guessing a Fate card and a Terror... Oh, no, I know exactly who it is. It's the shielding guy, the Corellian Engineer.
There you go. It's the first pod quiz in a long time. You got it right out of the park.
And the reason is because just yesterday I decided to test the Smuggler's Den with one less Message from Beyond and one of those.
I wish you had told me that.
I can't give you all my secrets. And the evaluation is it's not as good. And the reason is because I got Rescue as one of my opening pods, and the whole game I was going, if this was Message from Beyond, I could be looping all my tricks. Instead, I can do nothing. And I actually lost.
I have been running a Jedi deck that's pure Jedi, where it's similar to how you had set up with your Sith deck, where... Except that it's pure Jedi and I'm running one ofs. And so this is one of the sets that I'm running a one of in that deck. And the deck has been doing pretty well so far, all Jedi. You know, that Return of the Jedi at the end of the game when you've already gone through all your big ones and they're all dead and you're like, oh man, what am I going to do? And you see Return of the Jedi in your hand, you're like, yes, I get a Jedi character back. You know, and they come back onto the table. Force Rejuvenation, because it removes all, you know, so I had, you know, this was a situation where I had Yoda and he had fear on him and he had intimidate and he was already focused out. And I was like, oh man, I'm really in trouble. And I drew Force Rejuvenation and I was like, oh, never mind. Played Force Rejuvenation, took off both of their enhancements, cleared him all of his focus tokens and then, you know, went to town with him again.
Yeah, I actually love this pod. I give this pod maybe 4 out of 5 stars. I mean, it really is a phenomenal pod.
It is a good pod.
I feel like, what's it called? I feel like Return of the Jedi is one of those slap you in the face cards. So, like, if you're playing a Sith control deck, you are counting how many big guys you've taken care of. So you're like, okay, I got both of the Yodas are dead. I've got Luke controlled. He has a whole bunch of focus on him. And I've already seen both Hans. All right, I'm safe. I'm going to win this game. And then all of a sudden they go, Return of the Jedi, last and Force Rejuvenation. Luke is no longer focused out. Yoda's back. And the Sith player is just like, what happened? I had the game in hand. I have no idea what's going on now.
Right.
Those two cards are crazy powerful. I consider Redemption, at least in the decks I've been running with Guardians and Obi-Wan Spirit, as pretty much an edge card. I mean, it's a decent card, but with its prohibitive cost, I just don't see myself playing it all that often.
Yeah, I really like Redemption. It's a good, I always feel it's a really good opening card, more so than maybe Yoda or somebody, because of its health capacity, and it's a vehicle, right? So if you're playing Sith, you know, the problem with Yoda, right, is you're always afraid that if you spend your resources or on Luke or on Han, you spend all your resources on that one card, and they have, you know, Force Choke and Vader or some combination of things, you know, you lose your character really quick. But because it's a vehicle and has 4 health capacity, Redemption comes out and stays on the board. And I've had a couple times where it's done to me, and I've done it to other people where then I'm just committed to the Force, and it just stays out there as 3 Force icons and as a way of returning characters that die to my hand.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love it in that scenario. If I can get it out turn 1 without having to double focus stuff, sure, that's amazing. But that doesn't happen that often. And so what I'm talking about is like mid-game, I'm usually not playing it unless I just have an absolute plethora of resources. I'll usually save it and go, okay, this is a 3 Force icon edge card. So basically, it's a good card because even if you use it for an edge card, it's really great as an edge card.
Yeah, it's really good as an edge card. The whole objective set is really good for edge.
Yeah, I very much like it. I feel like as the meta evolves, this is going to be one of those pods that sees a ton of play.
Yep.
All right, so let's move to our last segment then, the card of the week. My card of the week is the Ice Tromper. We already talked about the Ice Tromper a fair amount, but it is a fabulous card. For those of you who have not tried the Hoth pods yet, do so. Ice Tromper shuts down Jedi, Wampas shut down Rebels, and this Ice Tromper is amazing. We already talked about you combo him with tactics. He messes up everyone's edge battles because they know that if they put everything in to win that edge battle, they're boned anyway. And you're Sith, so you probably have more cards than them. So they're looking at it going, oh my goodness, do I even put cards in for the edge battle? And if they don't, then you just tactics their guy. Or if you don't have a tactics guy on the board, let's say you have one of the 2-unit icon stormtroopers on the board, one of which is edge dependent, you put him in as the blocker, he's going to do 2 damage, and they're looking at it going, oh my goodness, so if I lose the edge, he does 2 damage, and then if they want to tromper me for 1 more, they can. The Ice Tromper is absolutely phenomenal. You should use him at least once before you evaluate those Hoth pods. He is that good.
So my card of the week is a card that I don't see a lot of play with, but as rainbow decks maybe seem to be something that people might be interested in and might be fun to play with. For the light side, it's a card called It Could Be Worse. Yeah, so it's a 0-cost event, and that's an interrupt, and it says prevent 1 damage being dealt to a target unit or objective. And so how many times have you played a game where that one objective is really that crucial point in a character surviving a battle, an objective surviving a battle, or any of the other times when you're just like, I just wish I had some way of keeping this character alive.
Yeah, you know what card is even better than that and makes me want to run a rainbow deck for the dark side is
It's Worse.
Yeah, now, I like that. That is a card.
That is a card too.
Oh my goodness. So they play their lightsaber deflection thinking, all right, I'm going to deflect 1 to your guy. You play It's Worse. Not only do they not deflect it to your guy, not only do they then take the damage, they take an extra damage and probably die.
Yep, nope. That's a good card too.
That's the card that I desperately, desperately want to work into a deck. So before we go, I just wanted to let everyone know that I have a new article series on CardGameDB called Into the Garbage Chute. It's basically, there's no continuity. Whatever I think about that particular week, I'll just write something down. So come by, give it a read. If it's terrible, that's fine. Just ignore it. But come check it out. Come check out CardGameDB in general. There's a lot of articles that are going up now. Neil from our meta is also doing an article about the neutral objective sets. It's a great source for information. We're actually working on the card database so that every card will have all of its official rulings on it. It will have all the rulings that have been received from Nate and from FFG, and you can just ask a question on that card, and someone will answer you. So come to CardGameDB and treat it as your card database. All right, well, that wraps up another edition of the Smuggler's Den. Until next time,
may the force be with you.